Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Get a TurboTax expert's undivided attention as they work on your return in real time. Experts can file as soon as today. Now, taxes is matching with a TurboTax expert who gives your taxes their undivided attention, just like your fantasy league waiver wire. They can file your taxes as soon as today, and while they do, you get real-time updates on their progress so you can go about your day. Now, this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
What was that?
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Tom Pelissero.
Tom, you don't put dirty drawers and mail them to yourself.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I'm a member of the Lakers and we're going away with a victory.
When I was watching that video, I was like, there's no way I'm playing.
Earlier on the show, head coach of Select QB Athletics, Darryl Colbert Jr., senior MLB writer for The Athletic, Andrew McCullough. Coming up, the Ringer NFL draft analyst, Todd McShay. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome back to another hour of A Rich Eisen the Show. I am Tom Pelissero, thrilled to be with you 2 weeks to the day out from the 2025 NFL draft. Todd McShay coming up in just a little bit. He's got a new mock draft. It is a fun one, too. He's got trades. He's got a bunch of quarterbacks going in the first round. One of the foremost draft experts. I'm really interested to talk to Todd, dig into some of those issues we've been talking about the quarterbacks beyond Cam Ward, about the wide receiver group, and which one actually comes out of it, and really about where the cutoffs are. Yeah, he was one of the pressure points.
He was
one
of the first ones that talked to us. I think he was at the Senior Bowl, right, TJ? Is that right? Where he said, look, Travis Hunter, if he was only a wide receiver, would be the number one wide receiver in this draft. He also just happens to be the number one defensive back. Like, that's how special he is.
And you don't have wide receivers or corners go traditionally one or even two.
Right.
He's both.
Yes.
And that is why he is squarely in the mix to go at number two. Brogman, I've seen the Masters sweater for the majority of the show. I have not heard the Masters voice in a while. Is there absolutely no action in Augusta? Nance would like to chime in on?
There's lots of action going on at Augusta right now. Mm. Scotty Scheffler just hit his approach shot on 13. He is firmly atop the leaderboard. Actually now one back at 3 under. He's tied with Colin Morikawa and Justin Rose at 3 under. Our new leader through 12 holes, Tyrrell Hatton. Tyrrell Hatton, a LIV golfer who's actually a maniac if you ever watch him play. He's 4 under through 12 right now.
So once again, the leader is, Jim?
Tyrrell Hatton.
Thank you, Jim. Who
You're
is
welcome.
That?
You're welcome.
Who is?
As I said, he's a fiery little UK fella who plays on the LIV tour. He gets very angry. He curses at himself a lot. He likes to throw his clubs. I think he might have some anger issues.
Blends in well on the Euro Tour.
His name is Tyrrell Hatton. Is 4 under.
Are you saying Terrell?
I think I've said his name three different ways.
Definitely have. Trying to follow you here,
well,
Jim.
It's not Tyrrell or Terrell.
You saying Pam or Pam?
I think it's Tyrrell Hatton. 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 Aaron Rye, your early leader, has fallen back. He checks into the clubhouse with a 70. He's 2. What is this music?
Ooh,
I didn't make it. It was left for me by El Tufo.
Tyrrell. I'm going with Tyrrell Hatton.
And the early leader has fallen back.
The early leader, Aaron Rye. He wears 2 gloves. He's 2 under.
Much as his name appears on the leaderboard, Jim, things went awry.
Oh, look at you, Tommy a wordsmith. You used to be a beat writer, I can tell. Corey Connors also 2 under. Some guy named Grazerman, I don't know his first name, he's 2 under. Jason Day, the Aussie, is also 2 under.
They should really call it the Masters and some other guys.
Can I do the voice or should I talk a normal voice?
No, I think we're back. I think the music stops. Oh. That's your cue to exit.
That's kind of the best part about the Masters is there's kind of an eclectic field. I mean, you have to be invited. There are some automatic qualifiers, obviously. But, you know, amateurs get in. They try to really have a diverse field, but it's only like 90-something guys. And, of course, you got all the former winners who are still eligible to play. They have no chance of winning, but, you know, you got Ian Woosnam out there and Fred Couples.
That's my favorite part.
And Bernard Langer. All these guys are still playing. They're not going to win, but they're out there for the first couple rounds. And one of them inevitably does make the cut, which makes for a super fun weekend.
I would like to see this as a twist to the NBA play-in. Where I think that, you know, we were looking at it yesterday and talking about it with Joe Varden, and there's some teams that are going to get into the play-in field of like 7, 8, 9, 10 mm-hmm. games under. What if one team in the play-in field every year was a group of former NBA champions who no longer play? It's basically like the, you know, the 3-on-3 league.
Like the big three.
But you field an entire team, much like the Masters. If you've won an NBA title, like what would you give?
Wait, so hold on a second. You want a complete 12-man team.
Correct.
A former, and they're only NBA champions.
Correct. You have to be an NBA champion. No, currently retired. Still playing would be interesting, but then you're almost in an all-star format. I just want to see like
Clyde Drexler out there.
Luke Longley. Just playing, and it's just like is he alive?
I don't think Longley's out.
Luke Longley's still alive. Yeah, it's still with us.
Just imagine. I mean, it could be recently retired players as well, but you have to have won an NBA title, and this becomes the Masters team in the play-in field.
You want Kenny Smith out there launching threes?
Or the in-season tournament. How about that? You have the in-season tournament. Just let there be an alumni field in each conference, but it's the Masters tournament.
That's pretty fun. That's a fun idea.
I think it would be like you'd have to be crafty.
You'd get guys who are just recently retired, right? So like, yeah. Do KG and Paul Pierce count?
Well, they've won championships.
No, I know, but I'm saying like, are they far enough?
I don't think there's.
Are they still in shape? I guess is my question.
Well, that's the problem. None of them's going to be in good enough shape.
Well, you know KG is, but like,
that's, but not to win a playoff game.
No, you could get even prior era players.
Like, you're telling me
John Stockton can't give you 5 good minutes right now? He's like 55 years old.
No, he can't.
5 good minutes.
What the hell is he going to do trying to chase John Morant around the court at this
defense
stage?
Defense is a problem.
No.
I think he can still distribute the ball.
Defense is a problem.
And plus, John Stockton never won a championship, so therefore he is exempt from
it. What could MJ give you?
Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan.
I mean, probably like 29, but that's Michael Jordan. You know?
Okay. Michael Jordan.
And he's also
champion.
63.
I'm never going to say anything less than 30 29, 30 for Mike.
Let's say even if it's more narrow, if it's not an all-star team, you just get the 98 Bulls. That's a while ago.
Tom, that's 20. I'm not good at math, but that's 27 years ago.
Judd Bushler's out here chasing around Steph Curry.
Win. I'm saying this would be hilarious. Yeah. And it would be
popped
a nice
Achilles,
touch.
Torn Achilles and popped hamstrings are great when you're over 50.
What was the Pistons team with Chauncey Billups? That's like Billups. 20 years ago.
That's 04, right?
04.
Yeah, so we got Rasheed and Tayshaun Prince and those guys. Darko. NBA Darko. Champion.
Are you telling me you would not watch that?
No, I would definitely watch. Tom, we hyped up and then watched Mike Tyson fight Jake Paul for months.
I mean, I had nothing to do with either of that.
It was the most watched thing
Netflix.
I didn't watch it.
I know. You watched.
It was badly streamed watched thing.
Oh, yeah. It kept freezing.
Once it came back.
Once the streaming got figured out, we were there.
But right now, I'm looking this up. Who would be the 10 seed in each conference?
I'm trying to put this team together.
Yeah.
So far, I got Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes.
Okay, so here's it.
I saw Matt Barnes over the weekend at Little League. He's still in shape.
So those are playing better. Let's say, okay, how about this? The Mavericks. Would you rather watch that Mavericks team, which was competitive last night, but do you want to see that Mavericks team? Or do you want to see Did the Thunder win one with Durant and Westbrook, or did they lose?
No, they lost.
They lost in the finals. I'm trying to think somebody from that era where the players are like right on the border of being in or out. A championship team from 10 years ago.
I doubt you would get any of the stars to play, right? So it would have to be the 9, 10, 11.
Why wouldn't you get any of the stars?
I don't think they would be interested in going out there and just getting embarrassed.
I think the ego level to be a professional athlete has to be so high that you would believe, I can go show these young bucks a little something. I don't want to play 40 minutes, but I can do this. I can go score 20 tonight.
Like Mark Mattson, does he want out there?
Okay, that's a great... So that Lakers team...
The Mad Dog TJ?
Kobe has passed away. But Shaq... Mad Dog...
Rick Fox?
You're asking for someone to die buckets? On the basketball court. Is essentially what you're... I don't care. I like this idea. Anybody passing away
and then you would
trying
do,
to prove something.
But then you would do like what it used to be like when you create the... I don't know if this was a strictly Minnesota thing, but I remember in playoffs for like baseball growing up, you would have your team, but in the playoffs, you would get to select like three players from other teams.
Now, that would be
all-stars on your team. So, all right, let's say
Brockman, I've talked to you about this before. We used to do this in pickup back in Altoona, Tom. We're like, you go to the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could draft three, like you just
said. Yes, exactly.
Three guys from a team in your league that did not make, and we benefited strongly one year, man. We got like the best player on in the league who never came for his team, Chris. Mm-hmm. But he showed up for the playoffs and he put up 25 a game for us. It was amazing. So I like that, Tom. I like that idea.
I'm trying to find a team that's got mostly players who are out, but like plausibly could still be in shape. All right, the 08 Celtics.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's the ones he's talking about.
I'm talking about Scalabrine, but you know KG is still in shape.
Yeah.
Pierce is probably fine. He can get you some buckets.
Kendrick Perkins, you think he's still got a few minutes?
No,
in?
Absolutely.
Have you seen
Perkins?
Perk's chilling right now, bro.
What, Eddie House?
Free Eddie House.
Big Baby?
And James. Big Baby, I think, is in prison.
He's up north right now.
Well, we could get him out for this.
A work release? Yeah.
There's no rules now. Work release. No, you play it in the prison. The play-in game is in the prison.
Tom, hold on. Prison Yard is an entirely different type. First of all, you're playing in jeans.
That's
different,
the style.
Different game.
That team could win.
Different game.
It's all about attitude. All right.
No different blood, game. No foul means different when you're in the yard, dog.
We might as well get Michael Irvin. We all saw the Longest Yard remake where he plays Adam Sandler one-on-one.
2011 Mavericks. How about that team? Oh, JJ Barea is out there somewhere.
Dirk could play.
Dirk could absolutely play. Tyson Chandler is still tall.
Sean Marion, the Jet.
Jason Kidd.
Jay Kidd.
Come on, he's coaching.
He can give you a few minutes. Again, just distribute the basketball. I don't know about the defense. He can distribute the basketball.
Think about this.
How about the Heat?
Would you rather watch this year's Mavericks or the Mavericks 10 years ago?
We know Chris Bosh is in shape. Chris Bosh is probably playing.
Remember, he had a heart issue, so he could just stand in the corner and shoot threes.
He don't have to play defense.
Here's what's crazy. 10 years ago was the start of the Warrior dynasty.
Yep.
That's what's unbelievable. So, and all those guys,
you
kind of
cross that off because they're still all in the league. Yeah. How about the 2014 Spurs? A team that I'm betting, I forgot they won.
Oh, you can't.
Tim Duncan.
That was the last one. Ginobili.
Yeah, exactly. It was the end for Duncan and Ginobili.
Paca.
Tony Parker.
Matt
probably
Bonner
still in
was on that team.
Matt Bonner, the pride of
Danny
New Hampshire.
Green. Kawhi's still playing, so we'd have to get him an exemption to join the team. If the team he was on missed the playoffs.
Well, that ain't going to happen.
Well, it could be like the Olympics. What if it's like that? Where you can either play for the country you live in, or you play for like your parents' birth country. Or basically, it could be like Kawhi. Do you want to play on your current team?
Oh,
or do you want to play with these guys?
Oh,
well, considering Kawhi made a conscious decision to leave San Antonio, I'm going to say he'll probably stay with the Clippers.
No, but I'm saying he's playing at the All-Star team.
844-204 Rich. I want to know would people watch this?
Kawhi and KG together in the front court.
Even after the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, would you watch this if you had the emeritus, the Masters team, the all-star team of former NBA champions in place of one of those teams?
I think
it's currently in the play-in field.
Realistically, I think, like I said about our old summer league, if you made up a team based on players who didn't make this year's playoffs, now I think that could really be something.
So players on teams that didn't make the playoffs, and they get to play in the play-in?
Yeah, and then you just assemble that team together.
But that would actually be a real team.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Every team has one guy who would make a playoff team better, right?
Yeah, I'm saying
six teams each conference miss the playoffs.
Up of one team from the teams that don't make the playoffs.
And you would you'd have to give them a funny name though. Then it wouldn't be the Masters tournament. It would have to be the semi All Stars, the playoffless ponies. I don't know. It's tough. That's tougher sell. I want to have Jack Nicklaus teeing off and Arnold Palmer at the start.
Someone said Tim Legler. Did he win an NBA title?
Who?
Tim Legler.
I don't think Legs ever played.
He could probably get up shots.
Ever won? Not played. I don't think he ever won a title though.
I think there would be a direct correlation between the taller you are, the better you can still play. Even though that's counterintuitive because you think the knees go and things like that.
Yeah,
I feel like the big guys. Now, Tim Legler obviously played on the perimeter. He's a great three-point shooter. But I do think that the small guys are going to struggle more just from you've lost the quickness that probably made you able to play at that smaller size.
I might push back and say the smaller guys are probably still in better shape, though, than the
bigger
guys.
You roll out the 94 Knicks. You roll out Starks and Oakley and just dudes who are going to come out there and act. Now, that would be the prison game, right? Like, just the full-on, there's no rules, no fouls. I can still, didn't Oakley fight a security guy like 2 years ago?
It was longer than that. And yeah, that's a whole thing. That's why Rich lost his mind. Right. He got thrown out of Madison Square. That was more than 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a while back. I think he got resolved more recently than that. we should probably take a break. I really meant to talk about the draft in that segment. Let's go to the next segment. Todd McShay, foremost draft experts. He's got a new mock draft out. He's got his own production company now. What does Todd have to say? And who does he think is going to turn the draft in the top five? We'll ask him right after this on the Rich Eisen Show.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there is the sneaker peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. Don't let the urge to sing along to that catchy tune distract you from that truck drifting towards your lane or that lane-splitting biker creeping up beside you. Fortunately, every Hyundai offers advanced safety features that can alert you to potential dangers around you. And Hyundai has over 120 IIHS Top Safety Awards since 2006 because Hyundai is always working to ensure the road doesn't get you. Hyundai vehicles have won over 120 IIHS Top Safety Awards from 2006 to 2024.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can also test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, or brake light fixed, or a quick service? Well, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. I know, because it's happened to me. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
I cannot believe you watched Charles Oakley get dragged out of Madison Square Garden with your own two eyes, Bob. I mean, I could not.
Spike Lee was there. You couldn't believe it.
Did everyone just like a during
wait a minute?
Time
Spike
like,
Lee was there.
Boo, boo.
It's kind of nice. That next thing you're gonna tell me, Jack Nicholson was at the Lakers game.
McEnroe was there. I know McEnroe, he was right there. He was practically in Oakley's lap.
Yeah, was Woody Allen there?
He was not.
I don't know why that's funny.
John Lithgow? Was John there?
Steve Earle was there. I saw Steve Earle.
Okay. Oh, really?
This is the new Madison Square Garden.
Leon was there, the actor.
Oh, sure. He was there. What about...
Bob Costas? Told you.
Costas. Now...
Oh, yeah, you got to...
Can you tell this story?
Not feeling me.
You got to tell the Costas story.
Tell the story.
When I was like 21 years old, I went to the... The Heisman Trophy.
At the Downtown Athletic Club?
I managed to get invited. Like, I had an extra ticket, or somebody gave me a ticket, and I went to the thing. And I went to the bathroom, and Bob Costas was in the next urinal. And I was, like, 21, so this was 1990, 91. And I said, and I was peeing, and I went, I just wanted to say, I'm a big fan of yours. And he went, don't you know the rule? You're not supposed to talk when you're in the urinal. And I was like, oh, God, I didn't.
That's how I learned the rule.
Anyway, so I'm at the Knicks game. I was at the Knicks game, and I never met him before since then. And I said to him, hey, this is Bobby Cannavale. I just wanted to introduce myself and say, when I was 21, I told him the story. And he went, doesn't sound like something I'd say.
Shot me down. Just complete shoot down. And
twice. Well, he was also sitting on the toilet when you told him the second time.
So what?
And shut the door, dude. I don't care that you have two Emmys. Chip. Shut the door, Chip. Chip.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm Tom Pelissero, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Tom McShay is going to join us shortly here as we dive deeper into the NFL draft. Phone lines also open, 844-204-RICH. Kevin in Arkansas has been waiting quite a while here. Let's give Kevin a shot. What do you got, buddy?
What's going on, guys? I hope you're having a good day, man.
What's up, man?
Just want to first say, I appreciate, you guys representing the non-player analyst or journalist, which it seems to be fewer and fewer, but y'all just seem like some genuine, just normal old guys, and I really enjoy watching. That being said, I want to talk about the fumble into the end zone rule that apparently, I know Rich, he kind of, I'm a big fan, but he let me down. So I figured I'd call in when he wasn't here so he couldn't hang up on me. I know I could get booted off the air quickly, so I'm like, wait, I bet TJ and Chris won't mind.
Well, Kevin, you only get booted off if Del Tufo's here and he accidentally, hangs up on you.
You're safe today.
Okay, all right, yeah. Well, I'll try to be quick. No, I appreciate it. But here's my point is, one, don't fix anything that's not broken. We love the NFL. We talk about how much we love the NFL. That's what your show is primarily around. And a lot of it is because of the high stakes. There's less games than any other league. There's more contact than any other sport. Again, so the stakes are high. And to start changing rules, because out of all the alterations that they made to this point, most of it outside of the kickoff of this past season, in my opinion, has not really been taking anything away as it's been to revising or, redoing a penalty or sort of, adding on to an existing rule. But to literally just take something away, I mean, to me, and hear me, and I'll get off here, but to correct me if I'm wrong, is it crazier that if you fumble at the very precipice of the end zone, your very job, right, you're at the right there at the thing, and then you drop the ball, figuratively and literally, you don't get penalized for it? Well, I mean, if you get sacked in the end zone, like, I feel like that's more of an argument to not make them punt the ball at least, because that's a ton. Like, they pin him on the one, guy gets a sack, it's 2 points, and the other team gets it. Plus, you don't even get to kick it normally.
We got it, Kevin.
That's way more crazy. That's way more over the top. But point is at the goal line in the red zone, the stakes are high. It's how it's always been, and it's how it should stay.
Thank you, Kevin.
Hang up and listen.
Here's the thing. I'm on Kevin's side. Apparently, I know where Rich stands on this particular subject. I actually completely agree. You're taking something. You'd be taking something away from the defensive player who made a fantastic play and rewarding somebody for screwing up. I'm with him. Tom McShay is with us right now. He is, of course, one of the foremost NFL draft experts. Great to see you, dude. Hope everything is going
well.
Sorry
to kick off Kevin from Arkansas.
I started to think we were going to use your entire segment on Kevin. I thought maybe that was actually you, and that's like the pseudonym when you check into hotels or something, Todd.
Yeah, it's something I should look into. He's hot on that, man.
He is.
Appreciate his passion.
And here's the thing. No one's talking about it. That's not a rule change that's being proposed. But, you know, hey, might come up again. So Kevin is now made very clear. All right, so we're 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. I'm curious just in the macro, too, because you've done this for so long. The sense I get talking to NFL people is that there's fewer elite, like truly blue chip players in this draft than some others, which kind of impacts, you know, some of the draft day maneuvering and the trades and things like that. I'm curious, first off, just where you kind of draw the line in your evaluations of who the true blue chip type talent is in this draft.
Yeah, I always kind of go about it with tiers, right? And I keep grades on every player, and so I can look back at different years. To me, like the elite top tier is Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter. It's two men at the top. So after that, though, I think an argument could be made whether it's at the bottom of tier one or top of tier two. Mason Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan, Ashton Jeanty, running back from Boise State, Tyler Warren, tight end from Penn State, and maybe Jalen Walker. I would put Jalen Walker right there next, the edge rusher and off the ball linebacker at Georgia. So when you look at those guys, like the next two from a lot of teams would be, well, Graham would be in there, but then also two players at positions that are not considered premium, you know, and Tyler Warren and Ashton Jeanty. But I think when we start getting into the discussion of do we take a quarterback at two or do we take a quarterback at three, when the top tier guys, the blues or the blue chips or whatever an organization would call them, are sitting there, that's a difficult decision to make. And quite honestly, you always lean towards taking one of those elite type players, and you see if you can get a quarterback later, or maybe this isn't the year for the quarterback. And I think that's why you've seen a couple of the moves that the Giants made. And I think that's why there's still a lot of talk when I have my conversations with friends inside the league, that Kirk Cousins is probably going to wind up in Cleveland.
I want to get back to that momentarily here, but let's start with Cam Ward at one, because really the draft begins at two with Cleveland, which could add Kirk and then draft one of those blue chip players you're talking about. With Cam Ward, it's an interesting conversation because it sounds like if you put him into last year's draft class, I've gotten varying opinions of where he would have ranked. I'm curious for you, how good of a prospect, not just in this draft, because he's in all likelihood going to go number one, but how good of a prospect is Cam Ward actually?
I think the conversation would have started at QB4 last year. You know, a lot of teams would have had J.J. McCarthy. That doesn't mean all teams had J.J. McCarthy. You know, obviously Atlanta had Michael Penix. But I think the conversation would have started at number four. There's no question in my mind, Caleb Williams, and we'll see what happens in year two with an offensive line that's been restructured and with the coach in Ben Johnson who comes in. It feels like the right fit for him. But Jaden Daniels, what he did was nothing short of remarkable as a first-year player. And then, obviously, like folks in New England are thrilled about the potential in the future for Drake May. So I think at number four, but I also caution, too, like the number four quarterback in last year's draft, that's a damn good player, right? And we saw what Bo Nix did in the right fit with the right coach and the right system with Sean Payton in Denver. And he was the sixth quarterback last year. So everyone who's like, well, Cam Ward would have been the fourth or fifth best quarterback last year. Yeah, but like, if you're in Tennessee, wouldn't you be pretty happy with what Bo Nix provided as a rookie?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I do think it's important to go in and kind of look at past years and try to give yourself perspective. But at the end of the day, we're talking about the quarterback position. And this is a player who's gotten better and better every year from every stop, Incarnate Word, Washington State, and Miami. He took it to a whole different level. Most evaluators had at best third round grades on him last year. A lot of people had fourth and fifth round grades. That's why he initially said he's going to the NFL draft and then wound up going back to Mario Cristobal and said, hey, does the offer still stand? Because when the committee gives out grades to underclassmen, the advisory committee that the NFL has put together has been very helpful for a lot of these young men. It's either a first round grade, a second round grade, or go back to school. He went back to school and he thrived in that Miami offensive system. I think from an instinct standpoint, like when pressure's coming, feeling where the pressure's coming, knowing when to abort, but doing it not with panic, I think that's one of his superpowers. He waits, like almost like Mahomes will wait for the pressure to come, and now you've out-leveraged yourself, and it's easy to escape. That's what he does. And then the arm angles. And I also think when he's in rhythm and he gets to the top of his drop, his right foot is planted in, and the timing is there with the wide receiver, he's an absolute assassin. And I think when Brian Callahan looked at that and got that clip reel of those instances and said, we can get him to do more of this within the structure of our offense, like I worked with Joe Burrow, and this guy can be a damn good starting quarterback in the league. And that's what they're betting on. And that's why they didn't have the workout with Shedeur Sanders recently. And it signaled, we knew that they were going to take Cam Ward if they were at number one. To me, that signaled when they respectfully canceled the private workout with Shedeur that we're not even open for business at with the number one pick to trade out of it.
And Shador's draft stock, where he ends up, it's one of the biggest mysteries going into this draft. I also saw your latest mock this morning, which reflected what I've heard too, which is that as much as, again, we can argue about the value and where they would have been in other classes, but I would not be shocked if Jalen Milroe ends up going in the first round. I would not be shocked if Jackson Dart goes in the first. Tyler Shuck is even the other one who, hypothetically, I think it's harder the 7 years and the injuries and everything else, but he's done really well in the pre-draft process here. When you look at that next tier, how are you stacking those guys?
I've got Jackson Dart just slightly ahead of Shedeur, and I think it's more of just the physical traits and what he can be, and I think it's more appealing to a multitude of NFL teams compared to, like, for Shedeur to have success, it's got to be with in the kind of like precision based offensive attack. That's why I like in this mock draft, I had Cleveland trading back up into the first round of pick 15. And we could dive more into the mechanics of all of that. But I just look at it from a football perspective. And whether I have Shedeur rated as QB2 or Dart as QB2, when you sit down and start looking at what could happen draft night, well, you have better contacts than I do, and this is your lane. But when I talk to people in the league, like, I'm not getting any sense that Shador's going 2 or 3 to Cleveland or the Giants. I also feel pretty strongly that he's not going to go to the Jets at 7. I think it's very unlikely that he goes to the Raiders at 6. So now all of a sudden you look at the top 10 and you say, all right, the Saints. That's the landing spot. QB2 could be the Saints. And then I look at the history with Kellen Moore. He's been the offensive coordinator the last three spots, right? Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert, and Jalen Hurts. The NFL comp, if you talk to a lot of people in the league, for Jackson Dart is Jalen Hurts. And they're all kind of sturdy build, stronger arms, and mobile. And that's like the opposite of what Shedeur is, and it's exactly what Jackson Dart is. And then you look at the pro days, and Kellen Moore didn't, as a first-year head coach, time is valuable. He's got a lot of things he's got to put in place. He didn't travel out to the Colorado Showcase. And I know it's one state over, but it's still a 6-hour drive or getting on a plane. He went to Jackson Darts. So I start putting all these pieces together, and I just think it's if New Orleans goes quarterback at 9, I'll be shocked if it's not Dart. Let's put it that way. And now all of a sudden we're at pick 10, and Shedeur Sanders and the media circus that surrounds the Coach Prime and his son and that and Travis and the whole program. Like, this is going to be a fascinating night. So 21 is the next team that you can pinpoint, as you well know, that needs a quarterback. There's been some minor buzz about Miami at 13. I'm not sure about that. So then if Cleveland were to try to go move up, because Stefanski's a perfect fit when you talk about what he's worked with in the past, precision-based quarterbacks. McCown, I think, and Kirk Cousins, obviously, winning like 11 and 10 games. He's worked with these guys. He's had success. That's his system. He doesn't need the big arm quarterback. He doesn't need the overly mobile quarterback. And so I think it would be a perfect fit between Stefanski and Shedeur, but you got to get it at the right value. I can't give up next year's one, because if I liked him that much,
take him at 2.
I would have just take him at 2.
Right.
So some kind of deal. They've got 5 picks in the top 104. And if you maybe mortgage away a second or third next year with 1 or 2 picks from this year, move up. I put him at Atlanta at 15 because Atlanta only has, I believe, 5 picks in the entire draft this year. So I truly believe Cleveland's second pick will be a quarterback. And I would be surprised at this point, looking at all the private workouts they've had with all these guys, leading up to the draft in this short window of time. I actually think that it's more likely than not that they wind up moving back into the first round to accomplish that goal.
And then obviously the Kirk Cousins piece of this, which any trade involving Kirk is not going to happen prior to round one of the draft. And so there's going to be a tell based on what they do in terms of how they view the overall plan is something that maybe even occurs before that draft ends on Saturday. And if we look a little bit deeper into the draft here, Todd, who's a guy or two that you're higher on than maybe what the public perception or other people in the draft community are seeing right now?
Listen, I know there's some like maturity questions, and he bounced around to like five high schools and two different colleges, or three high schools and two different colleges. I think Walter Nolan is an absolute stud along the defensive front, the Ole Miss defensive tackle. I think after Mason Graham, he's the second most talented interior defensive lineman, and he might be the third most talented defensive lineman in this class. Where is he going to come off the board is kind of the question. I look at teams, you know, in that, like, could 12 be a or 13 be a possibility with Miami starting in that range? I think he's going to go somewhere in the early teens. I really do. I think Walter Nolan, but I think people have kind of been cautious with that. And you look, the sack production hasn't been necessarily elite. But I think Walter Nolan is a lot better. I think Jahdae Barron, the cornerback from Texas, and yes, he played a lot of zone, and yes, he's got the shorter arms. Will Johnson is going to be a really good pro. He's great when the ball's in front of him. You can look at the pick sixes, some of the highlights, and some of the things he can do. I think Jahdae Barron, there's not 15 better football players in the draft. And I said there weren't 20 better players in the draft when Brian Branch came out, and he wound up falling to the early second round. So I think these guys, kind of because of the position they play, viewed as a nickel, the value isn't there, and I understand that. But I think when we look back on drafts, we're like, how did that guy fall? He's just such a good football player, right? And I think Barron's going to be one of those guys that probably belongs in the top 12, 13 picks in this class. But if you start going through the mock, like, it's possible he falls into the 20s.
You also had two, not including Travis Hunter, who's a unicorn. I don't even call him a wide receiver. You have two pure wide receivers going in the first, which I think reflects the opinion within the league for a while now, which is that this is just not, in terms of the top-end talent, on par with recent right. classes here. When you look at Tet McMillan in particular, and the pre-draft process has not been ideal for him, is the tape good enough that someone's going to kind of do like what the Falcons did with Drake London a couple years ago, which is, yeah, he didn't run a 40, and everybody says he's slow. We don't care. Tape's good. We're taking him.
Tet McMillan's one of the toughest evaluations in this class because you'd have to be blind not to see the 6'4 and the 219 pounds and the length. And any slapstick could sit there and watch the highlights and see, you know, the acrobatic catches are phenomenal. I know what he can be in that regard, and that's a pretty good thing. A guy where you can throw the ball up, contested catches. He's also really good after the catch. Drake took a year to become the guy that he was this past season in Atlanta to become a 1,000-plus receiving yards receiver in the NFL. Drake had a little more dog in him, though. And I get almost a little offended in Drake's camp because I saw in Drake a player who was working his tail off to do everything right, attention to detail, was not a great route runner coming out, had a lot still to learn, former basketball background, all of that. Tet has a lot of the same special traits, okay? But it's hard to unsee some of the tape, and you get to go back to 2023 and you can excuse some of it away, but not finishing routes, not like the lack of attention to detail as a route runner. I just didn't see that same level of dog in him, if you will. And so I'm not as high on him as some people, but I still recognize the talent. I still think I would still draft him later in the first round, but I think he could go as high as 12, where I mocked him in this recent 3.0 to Dallas, because he, like, the compliment opposite CeeDee Lamb and the opportunities for one-on-ones against some smaller defensive backs and Dak being able to just put the ball up. I see that. I can envision the success there. But I then watch Matthew Golden and I watch his attention to detail and the route running and the 4.29 speed and the fact that they needed someone to step up a receiver coming from Houston, and he did that in the big games and the big moments and the ability to adjust to the football. I just like Matthew Golden a lot. And Emeka Ebuka is going to be a really good slot. He, like, the more you watch of him, the more you understand his kind of subtle brilliance, if you will. I think those are the three guys you could hear their names called. I would take Golden over Tet McMillan, but I think McMillan is probably right now, like if you go to FanDuel or wherever, I'm sure the odds are higher for McMillan to come off the board than they are for Golden to be the first true receiver, as you said, in this year's draft.
So you got the new mock draft that is out, mock draft 3.0. I don't know what the paywall rules are and whatnot. So can you tell people how to find all your draft content here going into this draft?
I appreciate that, Tom. I don't like plugging my own stuff, but just Google it. It's the McShay Report, okay?
There you go.
You can subscribe. You can be a free subscriber. The mock drafts go behind the paywall. We're on, you know, YouTube, Spotify. This week, I just gave out the whole thing on our show. It's, you know, it was too much to share. We had four quarterbacks in the first round, two trades moving up to get these guys. And I haven't felt this good about a mock draft in a while, which means it's probably you could rip it up after three picks. but it was like a 3-day process of a lot of calls and putting pieces together. And just every once in a while, it feels like we're heading in the right direction. So we'll see. I'll screw it up by mock 4.0 the night before the draft.
Todd, thank you very much, man. Great stuff. Appreciate you being here.
All right. Thanks, brother. Take care.
Todd McShay. You can find him at all those places.
So good.
That he just mentioned right now. Including the McShay Report and his podcast on The Ringer.
Yeah, Tet McMillan minus 250 would be the first wide receiver taken.
See, you're always a step ahead. You always get the numbers.
Matthew Golden plus 170. I love that value.
Any Masters updates over there?
Oh, the Masters. We want to get back down into the voice because I can do it. Yeah, Masters. We now have a three-way lead atop the leaderboard. Three-way tie. Corey Connors, the Canadian now, your clubhouse leader. He is in with a 68. He's four under right now, tied with the previously mentioned Tyrrell Hatton, who's four under through 14, and Justin Rose, four under through 8. Scottie Scheffler, one back, minus 3.
That's good stuff, Jim.
Thanks. I'm sure Rich Ackerman will fill in the rest.
That's right. Let's take a quick break here. I want to dig into a couple of things, too, that McShay said right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. We know just how fast your life moves. You have bills to pay, mouths to feed, and not a lot of free time. That's why we created an all-in-one banking experience that lets you keep on banking on. It can save you time and money with new lightning-fast direct deposit setup, and it offers checking accounts with ATM refunds and no service fees. Plus, whether you have credit or not, you can build your credit score with the new ability to report on-time bill payments. And with personalized financial insights on My Making Sense, the ability to view all your accounts in one place, custom notifications, and 24/7 fraud protection, you can get a full picture of your finances. So if you want an all-in-one banking experience that lets you keep on banking on, sign up today. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Insured by NCUA.
McDonald's meets the Minecraft universe with one of six collectibles and your choice of a Big Mac or 10-piece McNuggets with spicy nether flame sauce. Now available with a Minecraft movie meal.
At participating McDonald's for a limited time, a Minecraft movie only in theaters.
This is a letter written in March of 1998 to Colts owner Jim Irsay, who at the time, a month away in the draft, the decision between you and Peyton Manning.
Right.
It's from Hunter S. Thompson.
Dear James,
in response to your addled request for a quick $30 million loan to secure the services of the Manning kid, I have to say no at this time. But the Leaf boy is another matter. He looks strong and Manning doesn't, or at least not strong enough to handle that welcome to the NFL business for 2 years without a world-class offensive line. How are you fixed at left OT for the next few years, James? Think about it. You don't want a China doll back there when that freak sap comes crashing in.
Wow.
Okay, let me know if you need some money for Leaf. I expect to be very rich when this Depp movie comes out. Your faithful consultant, Hunter, and it's signed HST, with at the bottom scrawled in handwriting, CC John Walsh, ESPN, and CC Colonel Depp. How did you come into possession of this letter?
So I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, and they were in town last week, and I was sitting there behind the dugout, and a guy
in LA
and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, Are you Ryan Leaf? I said, yes, sir. And he said, man, I'm just such a fan of what you're doing now with the foundation and everything like that. And we talked for a little bit. And he's like, have you ever seen the Hunter S. Thompson letter? And I'm like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Would you like to see it? And I said, well, yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't believe it for a second, right? And there it came in the email, and I showed it to my fiance, who's a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan. And we read it, and I just, the absurdity of the fact that A, Hunter S. Thompson knew who I was, and B, that he was trying to persuade Mr. Irsay to draft me instead was just comical. And not to see it for 20 years, how does it, it's just nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
Right.
I called John Walsh of ESPN, and he says, because he's known Hunter and his family's known Hunter S. for years, he said his wife was like, why are they thinking it's not real? And as a matter of fact, it's 1,000% real.
Wow.
Wow. And Hunter S. Thompson was a huge NFL fan and obviously had an opinion on the 1998 draft.
Well, I think now that we know that a lot of people had an opinion on the 1998 NFL draft.
This is amazing.
Isn't that amazing? I love that line, is that you don't want a China doll back there when that freak sap comes crashing in.
The irony of all this, right? The irony of this, he would go on and start the most consecutive games of anybody. And I would be injured going into year two and miss the entire season. So we're just reminding people.
Strong, underlined.
Yes, strong.
Hunter S. Thompson always had various NFL references in all his books. I've read most of it. There's always little bits of and pieces of different things sports related. I mean, that was his original grift, was claiming that the main book, his most well-known work, was him pretending to go and cover a car race and produce one like caption for a photo, and instead spent tons of money and wrote a novel basically that they sent in. They're like, what is this? I mean, that's where Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas came from.
Right.
But a big Ryan Leaf fan is interesting. There were, here's the thing. Many NFL scouts had some similar opinions.
We're big Ryan Leaf fans.
Colts love Ryan, but Colts ultimately, made a fairly wise decision.
Indeed.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. Just talked to NFL draft expert Todd McShay. There were a lot of interesting things from Todd there, including the scenario, which a caller had brought up earlier in the show, but the idea of the Browns taking Travis Hunter and then trading up to get Shadur. And he made the same point that I did to the caller, which was, well, if you think that Shadur is elite, just take him at 2. In this scenario, he's got him trading up to 15, which is still going to cost a lot. It's hard to imagine that they would expend that type of draft capital, but they do have 5 picks in the top 100 and change.
But going up to 15, would that require a 26 first rounder?
To go all the way up from 33, you would think yes.
Okay.
You would think, or a combination of picks that add up to that.
Right.
Depending what draft value chart you're going off of, there's different people who use different ones. But yes, sure. it would be a substantial sum to get up there. The fact that he's got Jackson Dart, what he said about Kellen Moore and Jackson Dart is really fascinating, because there is that sense of, would it work playing that style of offense? And Kellen, you know, he's always been a pass game guy, but then more recently, last year, he had the number one ranked running offense in the league. What do you actually want to be? I mean, Shadur Sanders is not a runner. And that is, I told Darrell Colbert, that's the misconception. If you just heard, oh, Deion's kid's a quarterback now, you think, oh, he must just be running circles around everybody. No, it's not him. He's a rhythm pocket passer who's accurate, throwing the ball down the field. And you better protect him, because he's going to hold the ball and try to make those things happen down the field.
He really makes sense for the Raiders when you think about it.
If they're going to sit him, but I don't know that he wants to go into a place and sit for 2 years.
I'm just saying, Geno is a rhythm pocket passer. Obviously, Tom Brady, a rhythm pocket passer, is kind of overseeing all of this.
Right. You would think, though, that would make more sense if you were not committed to Geno effectively for 2 years.
Sure.
But we've seen weirder things. Kirk Cousins had a $100 million commitment, and he's still a member of the Atlanta Falcons. Justin Fields is now a member of the New York Jets after a bit of a strange year for him, getting traded from Chicago to Pittsburgh, starting 4-2, getting benched, never really playing again. He spoke to the media upon arriving for the off-season program. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
Of course, I've been on good teams. I've been on bad teams. So just the mindset and really just, like you said, the leadership. And AG has been in the same situation to where, you know, Detroit, they didn't start off hot. So I think he knows how to take a bad situation and turn it into a good one. So, you know, I've seen, you know, I've been on teams that have been, you know, 3-14 and stuff like that. And of course, last year, Pittsburgh, you know, we had a pretty good team making it to the playoffs and had a hot start. So I've seen both sides of it. So, you know, I can kind of tell the difference between just the characteristics of a, you know, a team that is not doing so well and the characteristics of a good team. So, of course, really just trying to implement that into, you know, our team and try to get all the, you know, good characteristics and just find the recipe of, you know, what makes us a playoff team.
So Justin Fields also, in the course of that same interview, I believe he had this sound too, he was asked, well, what happens if the Jets take a quarterback at number 7? Here's what he said.
Hey Justin, well, if the Jets take a quarterback here, whether it's 7, second round, whatever, how do you feel about the possibility of a young guy who might, you know, you might have to mentor or could be like nipping at your heels?
I don't really like to answer rhetorical questions, but like I said, I'm willing to teach. But yeah, I'm not really interested in, you know, rhetorical questions. So.
All righty.
Okay.
Not really a rhetorical question, but we'll let that part slide.
Big gulps, huh?
Listen, 2 years, $40 million is bridge quarterback money. Mm-hmm. They got $30 million guaranteed. He's set up to be the starter this year, probably next year. But that's not... that's not the type of money that you can't go and draft a long-term answer. If he'd been back in Pittsburgh, I mentioned earlier, the Steelers probably would have drafted a guy too, which is part of the reason he went for the bigger commitment with the Jets. You know, I don't see them taking a quarterback at 7. That would surprise me, especially because I don't know that there's another Justin Fields-type player, if that's the style of offense that you want to build. You know, I don't think you're taking Jalen Milroe up there. You taking Jackson Dart? Probably hard to say, especially because you know you need other positions to help you try to be, like he's talking about, a playoff team in 2025. But it does raise the specter again of, well, number one, that's kind of the, you know, what you get being with the New York media. But also, when we talk about what the surprises could be come draft weekend, that would definitely be one of them. It would create a really interesting situation for the Jets as they move forward. We got another one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, by the way, coming on the show tomorrow, Quinn Ewers.
Oh, hey, with us. All right.
Texas Quinn Ewers finally got to come on when Rich was not on.
Nice.
Since he's been leading the Arch Manning Brigade all this time. All right. A lot more fun to come. 3 more hours tomorrow. Thanks for being here.
Peace.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast-scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.